What does that say?
I like school.
I like school. Would you like school? If that's the way it went? That might be, as a dyslexic would see it. However, let's remember that Jesus would say of the dyslexic, "Suffer him to come unto me, and forbid him not." The dyslexic student is equal with all others in that respect. What is dyslexia? Now, maybe I should make an apology here, and that is, I'm used to talking to students most often and to teachers second to that, so I might come across that way today sometimes. But probably there isn't that much difference. What is dyslexia? Simply stated, a dyslexic is a picture thinker. He thinks in pictures. I have a list of 71 symptoms here, and I won't read them all for more than one reason, but I'll read a few. Tying my shoes, using a zipper, or buttoning my clothes was hard to learn. As a child, I was known to have been clumsy. Spelling was one of my most difficult subjects. In the classroom, I'm jumping rapidly from one to the next. In the classroom, teachers thought that I was not paying attention, staring out a window, or lost in space. Learning grammar never made sense to me. I often lose my place while reading. I tend to reverse or omit letters when I write. When I am given a series of instructions, I find them hard to follow. I either forget some or mix up the others. I cannot remember more than 5 different telephone numbers. I prefer rocking chairs and may swing my foot even to the annoyance of others. I am unable to accurately identify the time when something happened. I may say yesterday when the event occurred some days earlier. I have an excellent memory. At times, it is as if I see a photograph of past events or places. I have relatives who have many of the same problems I have. However, do not jump to conclusions because most of us have one or a few of these symptoms. In fact, if I may mention a name here, Brother Lester Showalter told me one time, and he's not a dyslexic, that he can only remember a few telephone numbers by memory. But then he told me why, but that's not my subject here today. A different reason. Now, some have said that it is not a learning disability, just a different way of thinking. Well, I guess that's fine. Terminology is terminology. Say it how you like. But remember that there are 2 miles of ditch for every mile of road. And on the one extreme, we have this idea of naming and maybe therefore, or naming every slight variation. And sometimes in naming it, we find refuge in the fact that there's an excuse then for possibly poor behavior, etc. So we have names, labels, we have ADD, we have ADHD, we have dyslexia, we have many more. In fact, there are, I think, about 6,000 disorders. To me, that very number proves something about the world in which we live, but we'll move on. We sometimes, as I said, excuse our responsibility. It's a little like teething babies. Aren't you glad that babies get teeth? That way, when he's fussy, you know, you at least, well, he's getting teeth. It's kind of nice that way, isn't it? And so an ADHD child may be bad a little bit. I mean, after all, he can't sit still. It's not possible. But sometimes they'll end up in jail later. It's amazing how still they can sit then. And so we have to be fair. Did I say we shouldn't use a label at all? No, I don't think. We have to remember this.
that we all have a healthy dose of ADAM.
With that perspective, we then can be realistic with the other side. The other extreme then is to say that there is no normal. And then that might take us back to the monkeys. No accountability to acceptable patterns. It does us good to have expectations. We need expected levels of performance. That's good for us. I have a book at home, the title, is that, help, I'm normal. I'm not recommending you get the book. I bought it because of the title, not because of its content. But there's something about that that's good for us to think about. So, to say there is no such a thing as dyslexia, for example, we're probably just fooling ourselves because there are people that struggle with this particular matter. But to say that because he struggles with that, we can sort of throw up our hands and say, well, he's a dyslexic, I guess. Never get very far. All right, let's move on. What does it boil down to? Jesus told the story of the talents. And he helped us to understand very clearly that it is not so important how much we have, but what we do with what we have. And it's the same for all of us. It doesn't matter how our brain structure is. We need to accept our lot in life the way God made us, and we need to do our best with what he gave us. That's everyone. What causes dyslexia? I don't have a good answer for that, but it is somewhat hereditary. It often shows up more frequently when the gene pool gets too small and or enclosed. Let's move on. What are some practical examples? One could be a boy writing his name. After a while, we have mostly a mess if we do that. That's called superimposing. And here's a technique for teachers, and I'll come back to that. It would be better for the teacher to write his name once and get him to trace it 8 times than to write his name 8 times and get him to trace each one, because a dyslexic is a picture thinker, and few of us can write John exactly the same every time, and he sees those imperfections and stacks them on top of each other, and it makes a mess. We wonder why he can't write. I had someone tell me one time about a student that studied her spelling words backwards and got a much better grade. I can fairly well imagine or believe that. We had a first grader singing in devotions. He was holding his songbook upside down. That same first grader one day was doing his printing in his book with his printing book upside down. Did it make any difference to him? One student told me one time, the more I study, this is about spelling, I believe. She said, the more I study, the worse grade I get. And I said, I believe it. One thing we need to do, teachers, and that is, again, I said I'm going to talk to you as I talk to teachers. I can't really help it, I guess. We need to remember that we need to be honest about the problem and then try to help where we can. Be compassionate, but don't pity him. Just be compassionate. And we don't treat students like cattle, that we run them into the corral in the morning and they get about 10 cc's of math and 15 of English and 8 of spelling, and we punch all day long as teachers. At the end of the day, we open the gate and they're out. We're out too. Good riddance. No, it's not that way. We need to be willing to do what it takes, whatever we can reasonably, to help each child. We had a student that was very dyslexic, and she was in probably grade 3 or 4, maybe 5, and there were cleaners that came in over the weekend, Friday evening probably. Cleaners had come in and cleaned the school, and in her classroom, the mother had written a Bible verse onto the board, and she had written it backwards. She was pretty good at that. And the students came in Monday morning, and they were just fascinated by this. And they were young students, you know, and they were looking up there, and they were all trying to unscramble this Bible verse. They were just trying to figure this all out. And this dyslexic walked in the door and looked where they looked, and she just read it. Tremendous advantage, sometimes, but not most times. That helps us to be compassionate. Remember as well, I told an older student one time that God has a different grade book than I do, and we need to help them understand that. You do your best. That's all we require of anyone. Do your best. How does a dyslexic think? I think this is very important to try to understand a little bit about how a dyslexic thinks. Remember that a dyslexic has a tremendous imagination. I said he's a picture thinker, so he has a great imagination. And this has its obvious advantages. It makes no difference if the coloring book is right side up or upside down, if that is an advantage. Now, you might ask the question, but do the cows in the barn stand upside down sometimes too? No. That's 3D. And a dyslexic doesn't have any problem connecting with a 3D world. I shouldn't say any problem. Has little problem connecting with a 3D world. It's the 2D world that he finds very difficult. In fact, I've watched that. And that's where, again, as boards and teachers, we need to be balanced. We need to help this child the best we can, but we should not pull our hair endlessly and somehow take personal accountability for the way this child is. I've watched dyslexics move out of school and move into life, and yes, there are some things that they never can shove off. Having a devotional at church might be a bit of a struggle to read that passage and clearly bring the thoughts across. But as far as a real life, the farm, the whatever business, they can perform quite well in the real world. So do your best for them, but don't be extreme. Well, this picture thinking, imagination also has some disadvantages. They can imagine the unreal or even the impossible. Just for an example, we have the angle concept. We would say that line is at an angle, approximately 45 degrees, but a dyslexic doesn't know what we're talking about. It's not angle, it's straight. It all depends on perspective. And so the same is true. Same way. It all depends from which way you look at that. And so a diamond and a square, dyslexics have tremendous difficulty with things like that. What's the difference? There is no difference to him. Because he parks himself wherever he wants to be. His imagination takes him anywhere. This is a square, it's a square, it's a square, it's a square. Or this is a diamond if you like, but doesn't make sense. Well, that's why then the D becomes a P, because the D, this way is a D, but that way is a P. Standing on the other side of the book to him is no encumbrance whatsoever. And so he is saying, he'd never say that, he is saying that how am I supposed to know which is right? And understanding this concept will help us understand the remedy that we might present a little later, partial remedy at least. It's all very fascinating to me, and I've said already, I wish there were a pill I could take. I'd love to be a dyslexic for half a day. In fact, I always tremble when I give this talk because I don't know what I'm talking about. Well, I try to know what I'm talking about. But I have had a few encouraging experiences over the years, and I've had more than once that a dyslexic, in essence, came to me, or he came to me afterward, and in essence he said, "That's how it is." I actually watched a dyslexic teach school one day, and it was interesting. He was trying to check, I shouldn't say it that way, he was checking math in class. But it was kind of a difficult experience, I think, for the teacher and for the students. Number transpositions and that, it matters in math. Well, let's go on. What can be done to remedy the problem? Be visual. One thing before I get to the visual part, this little telephone, how many have seen this kind of thing before? Okay, a number of you have, that's good. Little telephone, I can hear myself talking very well. And little children, that's the best time to catch this problem and work with it. They think that's kind of exciting. They don't mind talking on the phone. And if they read the whole English lesson this way to themselves, you and I would say, what difference does it make? I can hear. It does make a difference to some people. It does help. It helps, especially when there's a difference between reading the lesson silently or reading it aloud. And if not everyone can read it aloud, at least he can whisper. Shh, and it's right in there. It's the same as if it were read aloud, you see? It goes in. That's his gait that works well. Be visual. Sometimes teach with Play-Doh. Not always, maybe, but sometimes it's advantageous. The letters, and we build this A, and we build the B, and so on. And then have the child trace the letter while he says the sound. And remember this concept when teaching him how to write. I already mentioned that, the concept of transposition. Don't remember that he will make pictures of that letter in his mind. And so it'd be better to make one letter and have him go over it again and again and again. Keep your classroom as quiet as possible. A dyslexic is easily distracted. I suppose we're all that way, but probably a little bit more that way for him. Keep it quiet as quiet as you can. Be concise and brief in your teaching. Now, this is always true. Teachers should always be concise and brief, but it's especially true with a dyslexic. So you have your students at the board, and you're doing math with them. And you have this 74 plus 33, and we work across that thing. You've shown them already, and the teacher is showing them how to do this. But don't leave them there too long. Probably at the most three problems, and back to the desk, and away they go. And then I found this, I had a dyslexic, extreme case, I would say, of dyslexia. And I didn't bother spending a lot of time teaching with him. It was more, I'd say, okay, this is how you do it, and I'd do a little bit with him, and then I'd leave, and a couple minutes later, I'd be back at his desk. Oh, yeah, that's just about right, just right here. See what you did? Just fix this now. Okay, you both got it. Then I'd leave again. That's far more effective than 15 or 20 minutes of what's stressful for you is probably more stressful for him. A little bit and a little bit and a little bit will teach him much more effectively, generally. Be careful with trigger words, we call them, but don't rewrite the curriculum. Trigger words is a fact. English, what we mean by a trigger word is simply a word that has no picture. You take any sentence in the English language and there will be certain words in there that you can picture. There's the noun, there's a substantive in that sentence. And then there's the verb that's either jump or sing or walk. Those are solid words. And then there are a lot of trigger words in there. The boy jumped over a fence. The and a are just a prime example of trigger words. They have no picture whatsoever. In fact, some languages, like Hindi, for example, doesn't bother with articles. You don't need them. But English has them. And so I had one teacher one time, I was visiting with her, and she was almost the place that we should rewrite the curriculum. I guess that's why I said what I did. Take all the trigger words out. Well, no, we can't do that. Let's be realistic. But if we're trying to teach him things like that, help us to understand technique. Pick out the words that matter in that sentence. Boy jumped fence. That's easy to figure out. Now, I want to introduce a few tools. And I'm not here, a few things I'd like to say. I'm not here to say that these tools are the best. It's not that way, or that others don't work. There are other courses. There's the Barton course, for example, that I've heard some good reports about. It is a one-to-one course, and it's quite costly. At least up front, it's quite costly. But I don't know a lot about that course beyond that, from just what I've heard. But I will present a little bit that we have picked up and used that has been at least somewhat effective. But don't expect immediate miracles or anything like that. Our lives aren't that way. It's hard work, teachers and boards together. It's hard work, it's good for us. But there are some things that we might be able to use. A few tools, I'm going to call them. And I'm not saying it will work in every situation. Now, the one tool here is called focus, and it's the Davis method, if some of you have heard about that, the gift of dyslexia. It's the Davis method, and some have feared that it's almost magical. It is fascinating to watch it work, but I don't believe it's magical, based on the simple fact that it's explainable. It's easily explained, and you can't do that with magic. Evil powers we can't understand or explain. And we are not changing the mind with this. I want you to listen carefully as we go through this. We're not changing the mind. We are simply saying, think like this. Look at it this way. It's always a P if you look at it this way. That's all we're saying. And we often do that in school, don't we? That's our job as teachers. Look at it this way. I would say start as soon as you understand the problem. Grade one, if possible. The younger the child is, the better, more effective it will be, and there will be less public embarrassment for him. Basic tools, we have release, focus, energy dial setting, and Koosh ball therapy. I don't think I'll have time to get to them all, and that's fine, but I'll look at a few of them. We'll look at each one individually. Release is simply a way to release pent-up energy. It sounds simple, and it is. We would take the child, we'd explain what a sigh is. It has to be an audible sound. Otherwise, it's a breath. So we take a deep breath, and we just let that tension. Often a dyslexic is a jittery, kind of a jittery boy, a girl. Hard to sit still, maybe, and so on. And so we need to relax ourselves sufficiently. We can concentrate. That relaxed feeling is called release. I don't think I'll spend a long time on it. After a lot of practice, they're able to think release. That's what's interesting about it. They don't have to actually do it after a while. They can just think in their mind. They've learned the feeling that goes with that of just letting the energy kind of flow out and relaxing and paying attention. However, they should be relaxed before we teach them the focus method. And that's my next point, is the focus. Keeping the whole process low-key can be advantageous. We don't want to make students stand out more than we must. And so some teachers have gotten the whole class, the whole grade one, maybe to do this focus together. And of course, to some of them, like it would be for me, it'd be kind of an amusement. But for others, it helps. It works. And we don't have to make a big fuss about for whom it works and for whom it doesn't work. It's just the way it is. We're just doing this right now. We're enjoying this. Our purpose is to self-direct the ability to be physically and mentally focused on the learning at hand. And so the child would sit comfortably and close his eyes. Now, in all of this that I'm going to present today, I would not recommend that you take this home and tell your teacher to do this. The only way I can recommend that is if you would actually read. There's too much here that you might forget. It's sort of critical that it's done correctly. It'd be good to either get that book, The Gift of Dyslexia, and I would hasten to say that I don't really accept everything in that book. It's a pretty thick book, and he gets a little too detailed in my mind in there about the mind and so on. I have to be wise, but
there is this part that we've used. So I would say, before you try it, make sure you have papers in front of you that you know what you're talking about. But let's pretend now. We're going to go through this a little bit. So the child is sitting here on his chair, and I tell him to close his eyes, and then we use our imagination for a little bit. Now remember that he has a tremendous power of imagination. And so I say, all right, we're going to play baseball now. And what are you doing? Oh, he's up to bat. Sure, why not? It's great fun. And all right, that's good. Now, we're at home, and it's supper time. What are you doing? Oh, well, that's not difficult either. You know, his imagination works well, and he's listening to his brother tell a story, and he's eating his potatoes or whatever. He's there. And then, okay, that's good. Now, picture yourself in a boat. Now, what are you doing? And once again, he'll probably have a fairly quick answer as to what he's doing on a boat. That'd be really fascinating to be out there in a boat. Now, once you've discussed a number of these imaginary situations for a while, then you ask him this question, and where were you all this time? And that might be a new thought to him. He might never have thought that he wasn't there. His imagination is sufficiently powerful that he was at the bat, at home plate, and he was eating supper, and he was in the boat. But he wasn't. He was right here all the time. Now, with that surrounding, we're ready to of course, you could have him open his eyes then. You could discuss this a little bit, where he was all this time. But then he would close his eyes. And then we would say, now take the imaginary person. We've differentiated now between the imaginary person, the boy that was right to bat the ball, and the boy that sat on the chair. We have two people now in his imagination, and that's good. So take the imaginary person now and make him walk around behind you. And so he walks around behind him. And now make that imaginary person close his eyes. Now make him reach out his hands and put them on your shoulders. And he keeps following you and nodding his head all the way through this. I'm going quickly over this. Can you feel his hands on your shoulders? And yeah, you probably can. Open the imaginary eyes back there and look down the top and back of your head. And then you put your hands right there. And now picture that the imaginary person behind you is looking through your head and out your eyes and looks at the book on the desk in front of you. Does that make sense? Yeah, makes sense. Now close the imaginary eyes again. Do you still feel his hands on your shoulders? Yeah, I do. All right, open your eyes. The real eyes now we're talking about. But keep the feeling of his hands. Keep him touching you from behind. Then the P will be right side up, and the D will be too. Because he's not over here. Or here. He's right here. All we've done was helped him to look at the paper the way the rest of the world looks at the paper. The only way we can do it to read. For the first several days, or maybe even a few weeks, we have to go through the procedure quite often with them. Eventually, they know the steps themselves. It only takes a few seconds. I've had an older student that had learned focus, and things weren't going well. In art class, the fence posts were here and there. And I just, did you focus? Or can you focus? Well, of course, she knew how to focus well, and she could do that. I didn't have to go through all with her. But remind them to use the tool throughout the day. Don't ask them to be focused on the playground. Let them run. When they come in, it helps. And I have papers here to prove the difference. Maybe you can't tell any difference. I'm too far away from most of you. But from that paper to that one, which time he was focused and which time he wasn't focused. You may look at him afterward if you want, but it's not too hard to figure out. And that's not what happened in between there, but simply the fact that he focused. And remember what focus is. It's just simply training that little mind that you have to look at the paper this way, whether you like it or not. You're out at recess time, but remember, a 3D world doesn't make him trouble. Recess doesn't really make him trouble. It's the 2D world.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about the energy dial setting. It. This has been effective. We found this to be effective as well. And this wouldn't have to only be a dyslexic, a child, that, but a dyslexic often finds it hard to relate to direction or command that most children would accept easily, or would understand, I should say. When our boys got too wild and rowdy, I'd tell them, calm down. And they usually figured that out pretty quickly. And if they didn't, then they had to come sit beside Dad for a while. Then they soon made the connection of what calm down means. But a dyslexic will find that much more difficult, largely because there's nothing concrete about it. And so in his mind, he would be saying, calm down, from what to what? I don't understand the connection. He would never tell you that. He doesn't know how. But he doesn't make the connection. There's nothing concrete about that. And so we think he's not listening, and maybe he's not. As I said, don't make excuse for him, but maybe help him, give him something concrete. And so, simply stated, the dial is simply, it's again imaginary, but to help him get started, you would make a dial and just picture a game spinner. So numbers from 1 to 10, or 0 to 10, I should say, and a little needle on there that you can snip and spins around, game spinner. All right, so, and then just go through that with him. Set your dial on 1 and you're sleeping in bed. On 2, you're starting to wake up. You open your eyes, but you're sleepy. And 3, your eyes are open. These are just relative, but you understand what we're doing. You're sitting up in bed. 4, you're eating breakfast. 5, you're sitting at your desk in school and your teacher's teaching you. 6, your class is singing songs and you're happy and singing aloud. 7, you're excited about recess and your teacher reminds you that you're in class and should have your dial set at 5. Set your dial on 8, you're on the playground bouncing a ball or jumping rope. 9, you're winning the race and you run as hard as you can. And then the race is over and you set your dial back to 5. And then he pictures that on his desk or somewhere where he can, as again, he has a lot of imagination. That's pretty easy to do for him. So he puts it there in his mind. And the teacher can use that then effectively. If he gets a little too... Well, I'll tell you a story. That'll help the most. There's a child that was that way. And his teacher taught him, I believe, focus and the energy dial setting. He came into my room in grade 6. That all happened probably when he was in grades 1 and 2. But he came into my room when he was in grade 6. And I never talked to him about the dial. I had never mentioned it to him. He knew nothing that I knew anything about it. But one day we were having social studies, a project. And of course the students were at their desks and they were moving around the back of the room. And it was exciting, right? They were building this, whatever, I don't remember, little project they were working at. And the energy level was just rising. I could see it happening and it was getting a little out of hand. And so I don't remember how I got his attention. They have an amazing way of knowing when they're being watched. They're quite wise. And somehow I got his attention. And I just held up 3 fingers like that. And you could just watch the energy flow out of that boy. Just changed. It was concrete to him. Made sense. He knew what I wanted. If I'd have said calm down, I don't know what he'd have done. But when I said put your dial at 3, he knew where. I went pretty low with 3, as you can tell. I wasn't sure enough about it myself, but I got the desired results. The energy went down. Well, the last one I had mentioned was the koosh ball. I don't think I'm going to go into that. Time's almost up here. That's just a way to stand on one foot and get him to exercise, throwing a ball back and forth between teacher and student. It's good, but I don't have time to go into it here. Maybe I've confused you more than helped you. Any quick questions or comments? I'm not sure if I'm qualified to answer that. I would think they'd be different, but I don't know enough about Down syndrome. I suppose it would work. I think the imagination helps because he can picture that, and it helps to bridge the gap between the abstract and the concrete. That's what we're trying to do. And to him, you know, when he's up in the haymow after supper, it is okay to be full throttle. And he maybe sometimes, and he knows after church he's not supposed to be full throttle, but all these other things, where am I supposed to be, is a little bit what he would be saying, I think. Now, I'm not saying by all this that a dyslexic doesn't need discipline. He has to be taught and trained. I'm not making an excuse. But sometimes if we understand their mental processes, we can do little things that help to bridge the gap in their experiences. And I would say in conclusion as well that remember that these children grow up and become adults, and God uses them in his kingdom. And we have this little window of time to do our best for them, but not to overreact to the situation. Just do our best for them, and they will move on in life and become useful. You will never lift someone higher until you love and accept him where he is. That's a good principle to remember as well. And remember also, as we said to that girl that struggled so hard with some of these things, that God has a different grade book than I do. We must never leave our students, our children, with the feeling that the way to please the teacher, the way to somehow win the teacher's attention or appreciation, is to get good grades. That's wrong. They must do their best. Every child must do his best. But we accept them just as well as anyone else in our classes. I would say the lower grades is your opportunity to do that, if without causing a lot of emotional upheaval. It depends. There are so many factors there. I mean, it depends if it's only one subject in which he struggles or if it's a broad spectrum. That's probably why in our grading class this morning we put the bar pretty high at grade one, is simply because that's our opportunity. And we need to somehow understand that failing a child is helping him. We need to make that really clear in our minds. I mean, if we're doing it with the right reason and motive, but we're helping him. So I'm not sure. Like I said, there are so many factors, and I feel at arm's length to answer that question. But what I would like to say is that's our opportunity. If he's really struggling and we feel that another year would help him to get on top of some of that, then I would say that's our chance to do it. If we wait till later, it's so much more difficult to regain lost ground. Yes?
How much extra time should a teacher spend with children like that?
Well, I think if we use a little bit of technique, it doesn't take as much extra time. Like if we would use things like this, or if we would help the child focus, then some of those things are simply a matter of remember to focus after recess, you know, and then he gets focused, and then we can, it'll still take extra teacher time. I guess that's why I said what I did earlier. We can go either way with this. We can not give him any extra attention at all and just say, well, I guess that's your problem if you can't think like the rest. But we can also go overboard the other way and pull our hair, I guess, as I said, and maybe too extreme. Keep his best in mind. Keep that in focus. Lord bless you.